Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. I'm a little bit stuffy. I got a little bit of a thing going on here. Kind of like Donald Trump. Just got a little sniffle. So I was just by accident... So, welcome to the show, everybody. Just by accident, I happened to pause on MSNBC's show, The 13th Floor, with Brian Williams. Just as Brian Williams was handed the breaking news, and he was handed the breaking news on a piece of paper, like old-time news. He was handed the breaking news that Trump had tested positive for COVID-19. Excuse me. Sorry, I'm a little congested. I'm not doing well. Anyway, Brian Williams could barely contain his glee. It was obvious. He could barely restrain himself from jumping up on his desk and jumping for joy. It was interesting to watch. Anyway, but I believe he's going to be sorry. And by the way, I wrote this and I sent it out in an email within, I don't know, a few hours of finding out the president had been diagnosed. Because... as you know, I've been asserting on this broadcast for quite some time that this virus is, well, I'll get to that. I'll get to that, because you people know what I've been saying, if you've been listening. Anyway, I believe Brian Williams and all the other maniacal leftists who are wishing death upon Donald Trump and jumping for joy and and all of that, they're all going to be sorry, because... once the 74-year-old, overweight, somewhat at-risk Donald Trump recovers from the coronavirus and does it just a couple of weeks from Election Day, he'll come out of the quarantine.
The way he's in the hospital.
Oh, that's right. He's hospitalized. Donald Trump's hospitalized.
In the hospital.
Oh, Walter Reed. Yeah, I hope he's got a food taster in there. I mean... I'm not a conspiracy theorist or anything, but I think there are some people in the government who want to get rid of Donald Trump. I mean, call me crazy. I mean, now they got him holed up there at Walter Reed. Anyway, I hope he's got a body man with him, that's all. I hope he's got some Secret Service guys he really, really trusts. So anyway, what was I? Oh, so Trump is going to recover, right? He'll have the sniffles. He'll be like me today. I'm a little sniffly. I'm a little congested. You know, my asthma is whatever, right? And then a couple weeks before the election, after Donald Trump recovers in front of God and everybody, and this is something everybody has to watch, the people who hate him, the people who love him, they all have to watch him recover from this virus. And then he's going to have the opportunity to give a speech. And you know what he's going to do. He's going to give the perfect speech because he's good at stuff like this. He's going to say, see, together we can all beat this. I beat it. Melania beat it. We can beat this thing. And then hopefully at that point, the left's fear narrative gets that much harder to keep up. I mean, at some point, we all have to. In fact, I'm going to try to help you people right now. If any of you are... if any of you are, by the way, before I move off the Donald Trump thing, if I'm Melania, I want to know two things. Number one, is this virus aerosol? Is it transmitted casually? And if not, just exactly how close an aid is Hope Hicks? All right, not to put too fine a point on it, okay? But I think he was married when he started seeing Melania, if I'm not mistaken. So she probably knows the score, right? She knows. Anyway, let's move off that because we don't know any of that.
Isn't he a little too old?
But here's what. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Men, in well into their. Where's my? I've lost my paperwork. Let's see here. Oh, here it is. So for those of you who are concerned about death rate. No, what do you call it? A virus's virility or its, there's a word I'm searching for and I'm reaching out in the dark like a moron with just a haze over my brain. And I can't find the word for the death capacity of a virus. Work with me on it. If you speak English, maybe you can figure out the word and please insert that here. If you're worried about how bad this bug is, let me just go through this quick list of people you may have heard of who caught the bug. Donald Trump, Melania Trump, Hope Hicks, Senator Tillis, John Jenkins, President of Notre Dame, Ronna McDaniel, RNC Chair, Bill Stevens, Mike Lee, Ron Johnson, Senators, Chris Christie, Big Fat Slob from New Jersey, Kellyanne Conway, Barfly, three White House reporters, Cam Newton of the evil, reprehensible, damnable New England Patriots, Boris Johnson, British Prime Minister, in March announced he was sick as a dog for 3 weeks. Prince Charles, 71 years old, positive in March. Mikhail Mishustin, the Prime Minister of Russia, positive April. Rand Paul, positive in March, he survived. Prince Albert of Monaco, tested positive in March. Pink, who's a singer, apparently, tested positive in April. Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson, March. Placido Domingo, 79 years old, test positive, recovers in March. Chris Cuomo may or may not have tested positive in March because you just can't trust a thing that Fredo says. Brooke Baldwin, April. George Stephanopoulos, April. Leslie Stahl, 60 Minutes correspondent, May. John Prine, country singer, April, died. Sophie Gregoire Trudeau, the beard. I mean the wife of Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, tested positive in March. Tony Shalhoub, an actor, tested positive in May. Idris Elba, March. Debbie Mazar, film actress, TV actor, March. Rachel Matthews, an actress, March. Christopher Hivju, Game of Thrones, actor, March, tested positive. Olga Kurylenko, an actress, tested positive in March. Terrence McNally, Tony Award-winning playwright, died March 24th. Laura Bell Bundy, stage actress, March. Adam Schlesinger, songwriter, died April 1, 52 years old. Daniel Day Kim, an actor, tested positive in March, survived. Roy Horn, entertainer, homosexual, died 75 years old. He was Siegfried and Roy, the Tiger guy, died in April. Andy Cohen, producer, March. Former NFL football player Cotton Underwood, tested positive in March. Harvey Weinstein, disgraced film producer, tested positive in March, unfortunately has still survived. Jackson Brown, singer-songwriter, tested positive in March. And then we come to Slim Thug. And we're going to pause on Slim Thug just because my extremely attractive audio engineer and I deeply appreciate the body of work that Slim Thug has contributed to the hip-hop culture. Slim Thug is a Houston rapper, and he posted up on Instagram. Let's see, this was back in, in March. He posted up on Instagram back in March that he had tested positive for the coronavirus despite his best efforts to protect himself. Since the outbreak, Slim said that he had been self-isolating and wearing a mask and gloves whenever he left the house. But he caught it. His symptoms included fever and a cough, tragically enough. But he did survive, did Mr. Slim Thug. Mark Bloom, the actor, died in March. Brad Scarface Jordan, a rapper from Houston, two Houston rappers, survived. He tested positive in March. Ray Benson, co-founder of Asleep at the Wheel, tested positive in March, still with us. Allie Wentworth, comedian, April. If I don't say they died, that means they lived. Kenny Babyface Edmonds, singer, record producer, April. Jedediah Bila, Fox and Friends, tested positive in April. Andrea Bocelli, the Italian tenor, the other guy, tested positive in May. Patrick Ewing, basketball legend, positive in May. Kevin Durant, basketball player, tested positive in March. Callum Hudson-Odoi, a Chelsea club football player, that's a soccer guy, tested positive in March. Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell of the Utah Jazz, tested positive in March. Sean Payton, New Orleans Saints, coach, March. Jason Collins tested positive in March. James L. Dolan, positive in March. Brian Allen of the Los Angeles Rams tested positive in March. Von Miller, the Denver Broncos linebacker, tested positive in April. Matri Ahtisaari, the former president of Finland, tested positive in March. Gregory Amond, Archbishop of New Orleans, 70 years old, tested positive in March and did survive. Francis Suarez, March, mayor of Miami, tested positive. Christopher Cross, the singer-songwriter, the moon in New York City, all of that, tested positive in April. And that Joe Diffie, the country singer, unfortunately, he perished in March at the age of 62 years old after complications related to the coronavirus. And so I give you this list, ladies and gentlemen, not to say anything more or less about the virus than I've already said, okay? The virus is real. Yeah, The virus could make you sick. Yes. The virus could kill you. Okay? I've said all this about the virus. What I gave you this list for is to tell you that to think that you can stop the spread of this virus is simply irrational. These are just people you've heard of who got it. Can we just cut it out? Let's just stop, folks. There's a virus out there that could make us sick. It could kill us. Okay, now let's get on with our lives. They're obsessing about where did the president catch the virus, right? Here's the thing. So I'm watching Fallen with Chris somebody. I can't remember. All In on MSNBC. Not that I watch MSNBC a lot. But I float around sometimes during, you know, when the DVR is stuck, and I have to watch the commercials, you know, I don't do that. Anyway, I'm watching Fallen, which is what we call All In, with Chris Hayes, I think it is, or anyway, and they're discussing the astonishingly low infection rates being found in schools among children. Where they've opened the schools, the kids have come back, and they've got positive rates of 0.02 or just some ridiculously low number. And then they spend a good 10 minutes talking about how to find ways to lower the infection rates in schools. When they just said, I feel like I'm in an Abbott and Costello routine. Anyway. So either these people are actually obsessed with the idea that they can eliminate a virus from the earth. Maybe they're that psychologically twisted and distorted and brain damaged that they think the purpose of all of us now in life is to eliminate this virus. Either that they actually have that mentally deranged, ill obsession, or they're being instructed to preach that obsession over lowering infection rates. And that's more terrifying to me than if they're just mentally deranged. Because we can deal with mentally deranged people. We have straitjackets and we have rooms that we can put them in. But when you've got a media and a celebrity culture that's actually obsessed with actually eliminating this virus, well, I mean, that's just... Anyway, that's just... that's scary. All right. Well, now, do I want to get to, by the way, the doctor, what do you go to here? We're not going to tape. We're not going to digital. As we go to hard drive or whatever, I guess we'll put this up. As we go to stream, that's what we'll say. As we go to stream, the president's doctor says, shockingly enough, he's okay. He's showing some mild symptoms. And the Dr. Ronnie Jackson says he does not expect Trump to remain in quarantine for 10 days because quarantine is for people who've been exposed. Trump is a confirmed case. As soon as his viral load is low enough, he'll be back out there. And so, yeah. All right, we've already covered the threat of the deep state against the president out there at Walter Reed. Hey, he survived so far this fight. He survived so far. I think if they were going to take him out, they would have poisoned him the first night. But let's go from there to the no normal file. I said the no normal file, where CNN reported last week that we are never getting back to normal. That's right. They published an article. encouraging us to accept the fact that things are never getting back to normal. Mm-hmm. Coronavirus restrictions such as face masks and social distancing will become permanent, says CNN. And the sooner we accept that, the better. That is, CNN International Security Editor Nick Patton Walsh. Things are most likely never getting, quote, back to normal, unquote. Whatever that means, back to normal. The CNN moron says that the pre-corona world is now mere nostalgia. Uh-huh. The mandatory wearing of masks will become permanent. It will be just a part of life, says, And he's finally, he says not wearing a face mask is going to become as taboo as drunk driving. Uh-huh. Okay. So there's the obsessed over at CNN. Meanwhile, while the hysterical bedwetters over at CNN think we're never getting back to normal, the rest of us out here are plodding back towards something resembling normal. My extremely attractive audio engineer and I actually went to a restaurant where masks are banned. They're actually banned. They have a they have a picture of the mask on the door, like everywhere in this Orwellian dystopia we live in. You got the picture of the mask on the door, but it's got the big red no bozos slash, right? Like the old Eddie Van Halen t-shirt, no bozos. The big red circle and slash. No masks. And then it has the first four amendments of the Constitution posted there on the door. And it was, you know what? I would have to call it, especially as I watched masked people come to the door, talk with the maitre d', and then decide to leave. As we all sat in there, shoulder to shoulder, right up against each other. The bar was packed. People were literally tied up against each other at the bar. And everybody was eating and talking and acting as if we could all somehow find a way forward. Even though there's a virus out there that could make you sick, you could get sick enough that you could die. And there's no way we're ever going to get rid of this virus. But hey, serve me up another tiramisu, huh? For the sake of nostalgia. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for sticking with us. Update report, Donald Trump continues to survive ravages of the coronavirus. So I've been saying that at this point, the virus is, at this point, it's a cold bug, folks. That's what it is. It's a cold bug, and it's going to be with us. It's going to come, and it's going to go, and some people are going to get sick, and all of that, okay? All right, so I mentioned MSNBC, so I've got to go over my extremely attractive audio engineer, who has renamed the primetime lineup over there at MSNBC. So we have some MSNBC.
I don't watch that either.
And no, not that we watch it. No, no. MSNBC parody show titles. Now, these first two, they're not really in primetime, these first two MSNBC shows. And I know this is a stretch to try to get a laugh out of this because nobody's aware of most of these shows, so it's, you know, you just, sometimes you gotta hang it out there and give it a shot. And these first two, they might not even be on the air anymore by the time you hear this, because I had never even heard of these shows. But we have The Beat with Ari Melber, which I never heard of The Beat, and I never heard of Ari Melber. I have no idea. Anyway, we call that one The Bleat. And now, okay, that's not, okay, now we have Joy Reid, right? We're all familiar with Joy Reid. She has a show now called The Readout, right? It's a take on her name, R-E-I-D, out, you get it? You get The Readout? Anyway, we call that The Really Doubt, The Really Doubt with Joy Reid. And of course, we already mentioned All In with Chris Hayes is Fallen with Chris Hayes. And I mean, not fall in, not like a military platoon, but fallen, as in like a construction accident type. That's what we're going for there. The Rachel Maddow Show. That one requires no parody title because, I mean, yeah, Rachel Maddow is a parody of herself, and you can't make any more fun of anything than to refer to it as Rachel Maddow. let's see. Then we come to Lawrence O'Donnell's big show, the Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell, my extremely attractive audio engineer, has dubbed Lawrence O'Donnell's show The Lost World. And then finally, the 11th hour with Brian Williams, of course, is the 13th floor with Brian Williams. There's your MSNBC lineup, ladies and gentlemen. Do I have anything else here? There's nothing else on all of that. So let's go to the science, really, file. There is a study in 2019 before all the current silliness erupted, right? And just in case you were wondering, why is it early on we were told that we shouldn't wear masks or we shouldn't rely on masks or nobody needed masks? I've heard people theorize, well, it's because we didn't have enough masks. We needed to keep them all for a frontline people and blah, blah, blah. The fact is, folks, before all this incredible insanity started, before we decided to throw away 5,000 years of collective knowledge, everybody knew that masks did not help against the transmission of viruses. That's all. We just knew that. We already knew that. How do I know we knew that? Well, because I knew it. By accident, I knew it. Well, not by accident. Anyway, a 2019 World Health Organization review of numerous studies testing the efficacy of face coverings to stop the transmission of influenza found no evidence that wearing masks is effective in reducing the transmission of the virus. But wait, Doug, this isn't the influenza virus. This is a new, different kind of virus. And masks help this kind. Just shut up with that. All right. Among the measures the studies reviewed were hand washing, quarantine protocols, school closures, respiratory etiquette, and face masks. 10 separate randomized controlled trials examining the effectiveness of face masks in stopping flu transmission. There was no evidence that they were effective in reducing the transmission of laboratory confirmed influenza. But Doug, this isn't influenza. This is a new mask-obeying, it's a mask-obedient virus. Put on your mask! the studies found that there were only, here, just two of the studies found any reduction at all in transmission rates. In one, there was a reduction that occurred over a two-week period during a five-month study. They weren't sure what to attribute that to. And while the other reductions in the other study were just not statistically significant. All right, so people say, well, Trump should have worn the mask and he wouldn't have it. I thought the mask was to protect other people. I thought I was wearing the mask for other people. Folks, if you're a mask believer and you're wearing the mask, you are wearing it for other people. You're wearing it to prolong their delusional behavior. If you're not wearing a mask, you're not wearing it for other people. You're not wearing it so they won't have to wear one forever. I stole that from my police officer buddy, who I won't name on the air because I don't want him to get killed because police officers are... it's got to be scary out there. Another law enforcement officer, cop, killed in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Just over this weekend, domestic violence call ends in a police officer being killed. Meanwhile, in the personhood file out in Hollywood, two big-time, big-name entertainment industry executives, who I will not name, interviewed with Variety magazine last week. And they said that reality-based abortion stories aren't told often enough in popular culture, in spite of the fact that abortion is safe and common. People do it all the time. All my friends have had an abortion. I'm getting one after lunch, said these Hollywood producers. I just had one this morning. Anyway, these two Hollywood producers say that telling stories, I'm sorry, entertainment industry executives, whatever that means, people who molest young girls and boys, I think. Anyway, they say telling stories about abortion can reduce fear and dispel inaccurate ideas about many aspects of the experience. They reminded us that television has proven to be an effective way to get average Americans exposed to LGBTQ relationships, single parenthood, and other stigmatized experiences. They go on to remind us that diverse stories can change attitudes and dissolve stigma. When you watch a character like a good mom being loving towards her children and then see her considering an abortion, you immediately understand that these experiences can coexist in one life. And because you can bet that these two having some kids and killing some kids, which, you know, I don't know if they're capable of being loving. I'm sure they're capable of caring for some kids and murdering others. You can bet that those two facts are coexisted in these two particular entertainment and industry executives' lives. How else do you become a shill for killing kids unless you've done it and you feel guilty about it? How do you become obsessed with the promotion of murdering innocent children unless it, the fact to ameliorate your own guilt, I think, is the primary motivator behind the rabid froth at the mouth pro-aborts is because they did it. Anyway, you know, there are some people with these two executives who I'm not going to name. I'll post it up. You can see who they are. I could care less. But these are big-time influential Hollywood people. And they want to start normalizing the idea of killing people as a means of solving problems, which is another way to say abortion. You know, these two executives, there are some people in their lives whom they have not killed. And there are some people in their lives whom they have killed. And those two things can, like, coexist in one life, you know? We're sophisticated people. Anyway. Here's what happens once you've partaken in a crime this insidious and just so evil. It pollutes your soul. Corrupts your spirit. And if you don't ever repent of it, it'll consume you. And it will suck you alive down into hell. So these two Hollywood executives, they not only have this need to justify themselves and ameliorate their own guilt, that evolves into a lust to demand that others affirm that what they did was good. See, it's not just they want to get over their guilt. They're beyond guilt. So you never repent of something that you should feel guilty about, then that develops into pride, and then pride develops into a need for the demand to demand others to say that what you're doing is good, and that's where these people are, and that's why they're going straight to hell with jet rockets. And that's why most of these people should be arrested for what they produce. And what does this lead to? Doug, you're awfully extreme, saying people should be arrested. All right. So these Hollywood producers, or executives, they want to promote a culture in which killing people is one option when considering how to solve a problem. That's just a more accurate way to describe abortion. Abortion is a euphemism. So that we can avoid the topic of what's actually happening. I'm choosing to murder someone to solve an inconvenience is really what abortion is. Murder for convenience sake. What does that lead to? Well, that leads to a society where people grow up, and even when they're adult walking around people, out of the womb like people, they think that killing people is an option. For solving a problem. For example, former Major League Baseball pitcher Charles Hager, he had a problem with his ex-girlfriend, Danielle Breed. They were not getting along. As can happen in relationships, right? So one of the options he had was to shoot her to death in her bedroom, and that's the option that he chose. He shot her to death. And then later, listen to how Fox News puts it. Later, after shooting his girlfriend to death and being on the run, being sought by police for murder. Hager suffered a self-inflicted gunshot wound, and his body was found.
He suffered, huh?
He suffered a... I hate the way urinalists are always trying to soften everything. This is not soft. This is hardcore reality. This is a guy gets mad at his girlfriend, shoots her to death, and then kills himself. And out in Hollywood, they want to normalize the idea that, hey, if you've got a problem, one of the options in the tool bag is murder. And that's why I say these people need to be arrested. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for all of that. Got an update on the fowl pox. Yes, the fowl pox that has... we have a virus rampaging through the chicken population here at the McBurney compound. The chicken that was blind, that lived in the bird whisperer's lap for the better part of a week, the scales fell from one eye anyway. And so it was interesting. I was there live to watch the bird whisperer as she brushed the last of the scales off the eye, the one eye of the blind chicken. And I'll tell you, it was an interesting thing to see a chicken regain its sight. Because now I understand that a chicken is not sentient. A chicken may not even be aware that it exists. But I can tell you that when a chicken suddenly receives its sight back, that chicken is happy. That was a happy chicken. The chicken was hopping and jumping and making sounds. And I mean, it was almost like doing a dance. It was really cool to watch that. And then and now, another thing. Now, you know you have successfully raised your children in the fear and admonition of the Lord when the chicken receives its sight back and your youngest child says, "Wow, just like the Apostle Paul." And so that was almost as good as watching the chicken dance, I'll tell you. That was really cool. Now, we do have another chicken who has succumbed to blindness due to the festering boils that the fowl pox has caused to erupt upon her face. And she is now convalescing at home there with the bird whisperer. She's in the house now. So two chickens blinded, none killed as far as we know, right, by the virus yet?
That
one's recovering. Yeah, she looks like Donald Trump up there. She's getting ready to give a speech. All right. So meanwhile, while all that was going on, it was really interesting sitting at a restaurant where none of the servers were wearing masks. Yeah, it's the first time that I can recall in 6 months. And seeing people at the bar, strangers who didn't know each other, noticing each other over their shoulder and then turning and talking to each other within 10 inches of each other. Acting as if we can behave like normal civilized people. Such audacity. And so the restaurant owner one of his workers is in the parking lot as security. Now, they never had security before because what? Someone's going to come and steal a cannoli? I don't think so. But they had to have security in the parking lot because there have been protesters. People coming up saying, "Wear your mask!" Throwing the mask shame on them. Anyway, we'll update you with a body count from our Saturday night adventure into Nostalgia Land. We'll try to update you on how many people dropped dead from coronavirus as a result of the... anyway, the owner, I asked the manager, I said, is the owner worried that you guys are going to get raided? Is he scared? And he said, no, he's not. He's not really scared of anything, really. Anyway, I was hoping there'd be a police raid of that right then. That would have been cool. No, I saw the owner later. I thought he was a hitman. I mean, the whole restaurant is kind of a Godfather themed. It's an Italian joint, you know. Leave the mask. Take the cannoli. Anyway. But he looked like a hitman right out of Central Casting. Meanwhile, so let's move on from that. We'll go to Like a Suicide File. The Like a Suicide File billboards are popping up all over Canada, according to ReformationCharlotte.org. Billboards encouraging families to stop having children. The billboards are sponsored by One Planet, One Child, based on the belief that the world is overpopulated.
Canada?
Yeah, Canada. Wow. Mm-hmm. According to One Planet, One Child's website, they envision a world where no one suffers in dire poverty and misery for lack of enough food, water, and other basic needs.
There's so many people dying in Canada.
Well, you know, there's all that poverty and misery and lack of food and water in Canada, huh?
Really?
The One Planet, One Child goes on their website to say, we see a world where all species thrive and where lower consumption and population are in balance with Earth's finite resources. We alert and educate that overpopulation is a root cause of resource depletion, species extinction, poverty, and climate change, eh? I forgot they were Canadian there. Our mission is to chart a path for human civilization that, rather than causing greater misery, enables good lives on a healthy planet. We advocate and support a smaller, truly sustainable human population through dramatic and voluntary reduction in birth rates, eh? There you go. Dramatic and voluntary reduction in birth rates. What a miserable lot. Can you imagine going out to an Italian dinner with these guys? What a fun time that's got to be. They boast that if their one child, one policy is followed for 100 years, the population of the world would decrease from 7.8 billion to around 3 billion. And they say that would decrease hunger and poverty. That's what they say. But the author over at ReformationCharlotte.org, and I'll post this up, the author reminds us that the economic depression caused by a century of population decline would have a significant impact on things like hunger and poverty. But anyway, that's like a suicide up in Canada. Meanwhile, from the decline and fall file, so I have a friend who has rightly pointed out over the years that whenever reality strikes, you know, things like 9/11 or an epidemic, you know, things that actually scare the hell out of people, when things like that happen, we tend to drop all the stupidity. We tend to cut it out with the gender reimagining and all the insanity that goes on every day. Back when things were normal, you know, and we were normalizing things like transgenderism and that boys can choose to be girls and all that wacky, insane stuff that conservatives have made a living laughing at for 30 years, alleged conservatives. Real conservatives have warned people that if you don't stop this, it's not going to end well, right? Real conservatives didn't make a living just laughing at it and yucking it up. And look at these silly people in the universities teaching this. Buy a box of cigars and yuck it up about it, huh? No. Real conservatives were saying, stop, because this is going to end in bloodshed, death, violence. It's going to be really bad. my friend, who's one of these conservatives, who's been warning people that this is not going to end well, has rightly pointed out that during times of real catastrophic fear and trouble and real danger, we tend to drop the silliness. Well, and that's why this time is different. Because the silliness hasn't stopped. In fact, it's been amplified. In the midst of people actually being afraid of dying and getting sick from this virus, they still haven't stopped with their rebellion against everything that's right and good and normal and godly and righteous. Out in Nevada, Nevada has a bill up that would, if it passes in November, the Constitution of Nevada will be rewritten, removing the definition of marriage. That's right. They've got a bill. They're going to vote on removing the definition of marriage. Now, no, they're not going to remove the definition of marriage from the book of Genesis. That's not what they're voting on. They're voting on removing it from the law in Nevada. If it passes, Nevada would recognize all marriages, regardless of gender, which that's a grammatical term. What they mean is sex. They would recognize all marriages, regardless of gender, and establish the rights. Oh, also, they say they're going to establish the rights of religious organizations to refuse to perform marriages on the basis of gender. Just a quick reminder to the legislature over there in Nevada. You're not going to establish the rights of religious organizations to do anything. Those rights have long been established before you ever came along to try to sodomize the culture. Religious people had rights. You're not going to establish anything. But here's what they are going to do. They're going to write into the law normalizing deviant marriage, whatever you want to call it. They're going to write into the law the religious exemptions, you see? And what people don't understand, I think, especially people in the pro-life, pro-family industry, what they don't understand is by allowing this to happen, you're basically taking the God-given rights you had and you're now codifying them in a way that gives the leftists the ability to take them away from you at some point in the not-too-distant future, which is exactly what's going to happen. You're giving these people the idea that they're establishing rights for us. And that's dangerous. That's the decline and fall file. We move now into the death penalty file. Bobby James Moore was convicted in 1980 of capital murder for the shooting death of a store clerk named James McCarble in Texas. James Moore was 20 years old at the time. His attorneys have argued for years that his execution would be unconstitutional because the test used to evaluate his mental abilities was not accurate. The U.S. Supreme Court sided with Bobby James Moore last year. The conservative Supreme Court that the Republicans have given us, they sided with the murderer last year. And now a Texas court has agreed to uphold the Supreme Court's opinion. And they changed Bobby James Moore's death sentence, which is already 40 years old. 40 years old. This guy's been on death row for 40 years. Well, they changed his sentence to life in prison. They changed his... I'm trying to read the story, folks. I'm having a little problem, okay? And I'll tell you why. Because of the sentence. They changed Moore's sentence to life in prison. He was granted parole in June. Well, that doesn't really make any sense, does it? If he was sentenced to life in prison, how was he granted parole? Oh, that's right. Life in prison means you'll probably get out at some point. I think we've established that. Bobby James Moore, there's nowhere in this article did anyone determine that he did not murder James McCarble in 1980. That's not disputed that he did it. What's disputed is whether or not we're going to put him to death, and we're not. We're going to let him out. Why? Because we have a culture where murder is just one of the options in the tool bag that you may or may not select. And folks, the children have taken that lesson to heart. And that's why this particular unpleasantness that we're going through right now, the cultural unpleasantness, this is different. This isn't just something that's going to pass. Because the silliness in Nevada with the redefining marriage, that didn't stop. all of the insanity around transgenderism and just all the silly leftism, it hasn't stopped. It's intensified. And then on top of that, the justice system has been infiltrated. There are sappers under the wire. They're in the compound, folks. Our justice system has been infiltrated by people dedicated to the overthrow of America. And that is what's happening right in front of our eyes right now. Doug McBurney, thank you for sticking with us, folks. We might go a little long. I don't know. I got so much here. I mean, what with the collapse of Western civilization and everything, there's a lot going on. Got a poll here. The Washington Examiner reports that a survey says 61% of people in the United States say that the United States is nearing a second civil war. I believe I coined that term. I have to look and see if I've got... 41% strongly agree with the assessment that America is approaching a second civil war. 52% of Americans are actually preparing for, putting away food and other essentials in anticipation of a civil war. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been said that politics is war by other means. And that is true. Because if we weren't able to work out our differences politically, we would take up arms and we would start killing one another. How do I know that? Because, well, I'm awake. Studied human history. Civil war is born of a politics no longer tenable. One side or the other decides that killing the other side is an option it may choose. It may or may not choose the option to start killing the other side. I would posit that the other side, that's the left, the dark side, the evil, the wicked, the godless, they've already decided to start killing our side. They decided that back in the 1960s, that when they decided they could legally start murdering innocent people. And now this is just the fruition of that culture. I'll give you an example. This is out in Virginia, the public schools system. This is from the insurrection file and also reason number 1188 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Out in Virginia, do I even need to say who this is? Does it really matter? I guess it doesn't matter that much. A school district, Fairfax County, there it is, Fairfax County, Virginia, has adopted books by Ibram Kendi as part of its history curriculum. Do you guys know who Ibram X. Kendi is? He's a Marxist. He's the one of the authors of what they call critical race theory. Kendi referred to white parents who adopt black children. He calls them white colonizers. Yeah. A white family, if they adopt a black child, we used to call that wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, Ibram Kendi calls it white colonization. And yeah, he's got a book. What's his book? I'll give you the title of his book. Here's, you know, you're a Marxist. Here's the thing about when you're lying. Lies typically take a lot more words than the truth. Okay, that's just a generalization, but generally when you lie, you have to use a lot more words. Telling the truth is usually pretty straightforward and simple. You can do it in very few words. But Ibram Kendi's book is a lie. It's called Stamped from the Beginning, The Definitive History of Racist Ideas in America and How to Be an Anti-Racist. So, Ibram, note to Ibram Kendi, that's too many words for the title of a book. Okay, I'm sorry, that's just too many words. Now, I know, one is the title, one is the subtitle. I never was a fan of the subtitle. If you can't get across in the title, then maybe you're not that good of an author. I mean, Stephen King, it. Two letters, all right? That's it. Okay. But Ibram Kendi's book is about anti-racism, which is racism disguised as anti-racism. Anyway, critical race theory was born out of the 1980s, born in the 1980s out of Marxism and class warfare. That's what it's all about. This is a report from The Federalist. Key to the Marxist strategy of indoctrination is getting the books of ideologues into the hands of students as required reading. And that's what's happened in the Fairfax County, Virginia school district. They purchased a bunch of Ibram Kendi's books, and it's now going to be a part of the history curriculum. As the Federalist reports that as the Black Lives Matter riots raged this spring, his book shot to the top of the bestseller list, and it was endorsed by Oprah Winfrey while things were burning. While people were being murdered in the streets, Jack Dorsey, one of the founders of some tech thing, endorsed the book. And, yeah. The central thesis of how to be an anti-racist, and all those words, is to dismantle racist systems, which begs the question, how far should we be willing to go to dismantle the racist system? And by the way, critical race theory holds that all of America is racist by design. Not only America is racist by design, but institutions, even fundamental institutions like marriage, I said, perpetuate racial inequality. So these, and folks, this has now been, a generation has been indoctrinated into this, starting with children in the early days of the Barack Obama administration. I remember I told you people, I was driving up Wadsworth Boulevard sometime during the administration of what's his name now, Barack Obama. And I remember seeing the children and their teachers standing out there with signs, and I'm thinking, this is scary. This is it. This is it. This generation is it. We're not going to go past this. And having spent a little bit of time with some folks in the younger generation just over the past week, I have to say that I don't have a lot of confidence that America comes out the other side of this looking anything like it looked before the big flinch. From the Second Civil War file, we've got a report. There was a report last, well, the Washington Examiner reminds us there was a report 2 weeks ago in the New York Times talking about escalating hostility of the Black Lives Matter mobs and their plans to move into residential neighborhoods. And they're doing it now. They go into these subdivisions with bullhorns, and they shout for people to come out of your house and into the street, and they demand that the people in the houses come out and support them in the streets. I saw this in the eyes of the children, the fifth and sixth grade children I saw along Wadsworth Boulevard in Arvada, Colorado. I saw this in their eyes, the hatred, the evil, the intent to kill. I saw it in the eyes. It was very eerie. So now the Marxist terrorists are going into diners, telling people to raise their fists. Out in Rochester, New York, they confronted a couple at an outdoor restaurant shaking their dinner tables. Have you people seen this video? It's terrifying. They've accosted people eating outside, urging everyone to raise their fists and show their allegiance to the movement or else. And the Examiner says people are worried because they're literally seeing their formerly peaceful lives upended by rioters screaming in their faces and threatening to overrun their neighborhoods. You know what's really eerie about this? Is that for the better part of 10 years, I and others used to march in the streets and warn people that you cannot murder innocent people and have a nice, quiet neighborhood. You cannot do that. No child killing with tranquility was one of the mantras, or I don't know what you call it. We used to say that. No child killing with tranquility. We were trying to warn people. We were trying to warn people. If you don't stop murdering innocent people, if you don't stop tolerating the murder of innocent people, if you don't start speaking up against the murder of innocent people, the tranquility of your neighborhoods will be taken from you. It is being taken from them now. Unfortunately, those of us who spoke up, ours will be taken too. That's the uncomfortable part. Meanwhile, let's go to the personhood file where Planned Parenthood, Planned Parenthood posted up a tweet or some sort of thing on social media after a particularly famous model and her particularly famous husband lost their baby. I'm not going to name them because I hate them. I hate them and I hate everything about them. And so I'm not going to name them, but they're famous. If I said their names, you would know who they are. Well, just over the past few weeks, they lost their baby about halfway through the pregnancy. They lost their...
Oh, they're not born? I mean,
No. The famous model was pregnant and her famous husband was the father. And they were about halfway through the pregnancy. And then... there was a miscarriage, unfortunately. The child died. And so here's what a Planned Parenthood organization posted up on social media. Oh, this was a tweet. They said, quote, "We're so sorry to hear that model and singer lost their son." Okay. And we admire them for sharing their story. Yes. Planned Parenthood admitting that an unborn child is a baby. And so here's another eerie thing. Years ago, when I first joined the personhood movement, and we wanted to make people admit that the unborn child is a person. That's what we wanted to do. We wanted to change the law to define an unborn child as a person. And I remember sitting in some of our strategy sessions and asking the question, well, what if we convince them to say it's a person, but they say, okay, it's a person, let's kill it anyway. Well, that's where we are. Planned Parenthood has no problem admitting that an unborn child is a person. They're just going to kill them anyway. Now, I don't know how to phrase this because I'm in such dark territory. It's just so evil. You know, one of the reasons God wrote the law was to make evil exceedingly wicked, to make wickedness exceedingly wicked, so that he's going to make us name it, and then we're going to do it anyway so that we have no excuse. So the people murdering unborn children at this point have just made themselves further without excuse because they know it's a child. In fact, this famous singer and his famous wife, they named their child Jack. The boy who died, his name was Jack. They had already named the child. So they know it's a baby. Yet they support the murder of unborn children. And so wickedness has become exceedingly wicked. And I'm sorry, once you get to that point where you're willing to name it and then do it, and then preach it, and then teach it, and then demand other people that say that it's good. I'm sorry. You don't get to keep your tranquil neighborhoods. You don't get to keep your subdivisions. You don't get to keep your suburbs. You don't get to keep your civilization.
You got it. If you want it.
got it! It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's a bonus segment, I suppose, of the Weekly Worldview. Hey, since we're losing civilization, at least we get a bonus segment of the Weekly Worldview. So America, in my opinion, has become a technocratic kleptocracy. That's a governance of robbery by experts. Yeah, that's... You know, America reminds me of an image I saw after 9/11. And when I went back and looked at it, it wasn't exactly the way I remembered it, which is kind of how your memory works. You tend to paint things in the way you remember them rather than the way they actually appeared. There's an image related to 9/11 that was taken on the day that the towers were struck. And it's a businessman falling to his death from one of the towers dressed in shirt sleeves, upside down, posed as if calmly walking, but upside down. And I remembered that he was carrying a briefcase. But when I went back and looked at the picture, there was no briefcase. But by all appearances, this fellow was oblivious to the catastrophic impact event that was rushing toward him at terminal velocity. That's the way the picture looked, and that's why it's so iconic. It's called The Falling Man. It's easy to find. But there was no briefcase in his hand, and I think it's that I confused that with a picture of a statue that was covered with ashes, a guy with a briefcase there on Wall Street. Anyway, you meld things together in your memory. Your memory can play tricks, but the idea is accurate. Casually walking, except upside down and falling at terminal velocity toward impact. Anyway, that's what I think of when I think of America right now. to the justice file, Deontay Lee Murray was picked up for a carjacking that occurred back on September 1st. Turns out he's the guy who ambushed the two Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputies that we saw in the video. Deontay Lee Murray, 36 years old, not a child. I thought it looked like a child. It must have been a trick of the camera. Anyway, he's pleaded not guilty to two counts of attempted murder on a peace officer. The two officers that last we checked, they have survived. So he was picked up on another carjacking charge. It wasn't even related to this, and then they found out that he was the guy. I mean, and now he's due back in court, according to the CBS in Los Angeles. Deontay Lee Murray, who tried to kill the two L.A. County sheriff's deputies, he's due back in court November 17th. So that's more than a month and a half from now. I mean, that's how backed up the L.A. criminal court system is. You got a guy on videotape, obviously shot two officers. They can't even get him in court for a month and a half. Why? Because the bloodshed and the murder and the raping and the kidnapping and the beating and the stealing and the shooting and the stabbing is just rampant. From the domestic tranquility file, we go across the country. It's not just L.A. Here's Altoona, Pennsylvania. Altoona, not well known as a crime-infested hellhole. Tavin McCullough, 23-year-old man, faces homicide charges there in Altoona. Police found his victim stabbed at least 9 times with a 10-inch kitchen knife. They found the victim in her bedroom. She was stabbed in the face, chest, stomach, and back. Went into the hospital this past Monday in critical condition. Shockingly, medical officials expect her to recover. The victim was Tavin McCullough's mother. She had sent him a text telling him to grow up and get a job. And that angered Tavin. And one of the options in his tool bag was to murder her. Homicide was one of the options, and that's the option he chose. Miraculously, she survived. Anyway, he's charged with stabbing, attempted murder on his mother. Meanwhile, from the Big Flinch file, B&G Foods has announced that the Black Chef will no longer appear on its cream of wheat packaging. That's right. You all may be familiar with the logo on cream of wheat. It's a black fellow in a chef's uniform. It's been there since the 1800s on cream of wheat. The company vowed back in June, when things were burning and people were being murdered in the streets, that its brands were... It wanted to take steps to ensure that its brands weren't inadvertently contributing to systemic racism. They bent the knee to the Marxist insurrection. And the company said, research suggests... listen to this. This is how insane things are. The company said just this past week that research suggests the image may be based on an actual chef from Chicago. But it reminds people, it reminds some consumers of depictions that they find offensive. Now, why would the face of any race of person on a package of good tasting food be offensive? How could that possibly be? You know what it is? It's the idea that someone who serves someone else, that's it, like a chef, the fact that he's black, that might strike people as racist, right? Because he's serving other people. A black man serving other people, that's racist. Folks, what we've taught our children have not been steeped in critical race theory, by the way. If you sent your kids to the public schools, they probably have at least been acquainted with critical race theory. So you should find out, talk to them, and let them know what we've taught our children is that civilization and our economy is based on all of us serving one another. We are all to be servants. There's nothing shameful in being a servant. In fact, there's honor in being a servant. You know, some people want to serve, not many. Others prefer lording their authority over others. That's what the Marxist insurrectionists of Black Lives Matter and Antifa and CNN and ABC and NBC and CBS and Hollywood and all of them, that's what they want. They want to lord their authority over others, and they view servants in a very negative light. And so to imply that someone else is a servant is to insult that person to these people. That's because they're evil, and they don't understand that it's the servant's heart that will be the heart that can rescue us from the hellscape that they have designed for us. It's going to be the servant who saves us. Meanwhile, we're almost done, folks. From the widespread tyranny file out in California, Governor Newsom signed a new law establishing a task force to study reparations for slavery. Yep, that comes on top of a 2008 law that requires that companies have a minimum number of board members who are female. And now, I think, let's see here, according to the legislature, there's a new law requiring public companies to have a minimum of one director from an underrepresented, it's about that ridiculous, an underrepresented community, as defined. And then California goes on to define an underrepresented, I can't even say it. It's so ridiculous, I can't even say it. Corporations with more than four but fewer than nine directors will have a minimum of two directors from an underrepresented community. If you have nine or more directors, you must have three directors from an underrepresented community. What is an underrepresented community, you might ask? An individual who self-identifies as Black, African American, Hispanic, Latino, Asian, Pacific Islander, Native American, Native Hawaiian, or Alaskan Native. or who self-identifies as gay, lesbian, bi-gender, or sense, transsexual. You know what I mean, the thing. Okay. So basically, Governor Newsom has signed a law requiring that your board has people who are of this identity, but then they're allowed to self-identify. So let's say you got a board and it's all a bunch of rich white guys, but three of them self-identify as black. Well, then Gavin Newsom has no problem with that. If everyone on the board is a normal heterosexual, but we'll make up some paperwork so that three of us identify as flamboyant transgendered homosexuals, that will satisfy the law. So we have a law, but you can just, if you just want to act like you agree with it, then you're okay. Because you can just self-identify. Yeah. Right? So, you know, other conservative hosts were, well, that's basically, this is just more silliness from the left. They're so silly over there. They've created a meaningless law. Right? That's, give me a cigar. So here's the thing, folks. Now it is stupid, and right? I mean, you can laugh at that. You know, you're gonna say I have to have women, but I can just self-identify as a woman. Okay, that is funny on its face, but there's something deeper here that we need to recognize, ladies and gentlemen. So I mean, first of all, let's laugh. Okay, he's created this meaningless whatever. They're gonna study reparations. So he's got, that's more work for family members, donors, dim-witted nephews, mistresses. Gavin Newsom will find work for all of those in the Pelosi crime family up there as they study reparations, right? And that, and then they have these requirements. the serious thing here, folks, aside from the laughter, is that the assertion that the government has such authority is the real achievement, so to speak, if you want to call it that. It's a wicked and evil and corrosive achievement, but that's what this law, it's basically establishing that the government has the authority to tell you who you can be on your corporate board. And that's the insidious, dangerous part. And while we all chuckle and smoke a cigar, the left is destroying civilization. And it's not, it's nothing to, it's nothing to chuckle about, although we have to chuckle about it because if not, we'll go insane. And until we actually have to pick up our rifles and participate actively in the Civil War, let's try to have as much fun as we can, and let's try to influence our neighbors for as much good as we can. But it's not... Well, let's just go to this. The Associated Press, in their style book, is suggesting, well, here's what they say. Please use care in deciding which term best applies when discussing a riot or unrest or protest or demonstration. A riot is a wild, violent disturbance of the peace involving a group of people. The term riot suggests uncontrolled chaos and pandemonium. Focusing on rioting and property destruction rather than the underlying grievance has been used in the past to stigmatize broad swaths of people protesting against things like lynching, police brutality, or for racial justice, going back to the urban uprisings of the 1960s. So the AP basically wants to soften the edges around the riots. You know. Mostly peaceful riots. There were some fires. There were a few people injured. There was some property damage. Windows were broken. Yes, things burned, but it was mostly peaceful. It was a protest, you see. A demonstration, even. That's the Associated Press. No surprise there, right? Well, here's one that will surprise you. From the Cultural Marxism File, the United States Navy SEALs, Special Warfare Combatant, Craft Crewman, all of that, have changed their written ethos. They have an ethos over there at the Navy SEALs. They've rewritten their ethos to eliminate gendered terms to be more inclusive. This is the Navy SEALs. Yep, they changed their ethos from Instead of seeing an uncommon man with an uncommon desire to succeed, they're now common citizens with uncommon desire to succeed. Yeah. They're going to change it from I am that man, to I am that warrior. No, from I am that man to I am that warrior. The word brotherhood will be eliminated in favor of group of maritime warriors. So you remember earlier in the show I told you that when you're lying, you tend to have to use more words? So they're going from brotherhood to group of maritime warriors. That's the Navy SEALs, ladies and gentlemen. We have a quote from the Navy SEAL spokesman, Matthew Strope. He confirmed, yes, these changes are being made. When asked why, he said, quote, Naval Special Warfare continues to deliberately develop a culture of tactical and ethical excellence that reflects the nation we represent and that draws upon the talents of the all-volunteer force who meet the standards of qualification as Navy SEALs. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. That is the end. This has been the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio and at American Right to Life and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.